Hi, everyone. You're listening to Tech and Savvy. I'm Emily.
And I'm April.
And in today's episode, we're going to talk with Andrew Carr, a community organizer in the north side of Chicago, who also happens to code. And he's interested in understanding how workplaces, specifically tech, reinforce identity and what that means for minorities. So, hey, Andrew. So glad to have you.
Hello, great to be here. My name is Andrew Carr, he, him pronouns. And for those of you that just want the visual description, black male, light skin, with slightly curly hair, and with a black t-shirt on with the logo of a community organizing group that I'm with, the Afro-Socialists and Socialists of Color Caucus.
Yeah, welcome to our podcast, Andrew. So for anyone who doesn't know, me and Andrew, well, now used to work together.
left me. Oh my gosh, abandoned me.
The wound is still, it's still open. So we both used to work together at Blue Cross as developers, you know, definitely had a lot of fun, lots of banter between the both of us. Really, really fun person.
Very appreciate all the banter.
And we're really excited to talk to you today. I think this is going to be a really great discussion. So just to give our audience like an intro, can you talk to us a little bit how you got into tech?
Yes, so I got into tech through a program called Dev Bootcamp, which is one of those part of like that massive growth, I feel like, and starting like 2013, just like anybody can code. And just sort of like thrusting as many people as possible into these like sort of haphazard, like 8 to 12 week programs. And so that's how I learned how to like write really messy code. Now, whether or not like taught me how to like create like anywhere close to production level, probably not. But that's how I got into, that's how I got into tech in 2015 is when I did the program. And then it's like a very long job search afterwards. I don't know if we're gonna talk about that now because I don't know if you want to see me cry, but job searches are the worst. But that's how I got into tech.
Oh.
Mildly facetious.
Oh my goodness. Well, I mean, we're glad you're here. Yes, yeah, definitely boot camps have been really popular over the past couple of years, especially for people who want to go the non-traditional route and don't want to spend like $200,000 on a bachelor's degree at a private school, mm-hmm. or even like $50,000 for a bachelor's degree at a public school. It has become a really accessible option to a lot of people. And we know that community organizing is really important to you also. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey into that?
Yes. So what happened is like I was doing this, doing the job search, and they definitely say like expect like a 5 month job search, which like LOL to like a quasi 3 month, less than 3 month program, and then a 5 month job search. And just even being able to job search is like a privileged thing to do. Like, and I was very fortunate to have like parents who sort of like would help me cover rent if I wasn't able to for that month. So that was one way that like my own privilege got into it. But still, the job search was left me just like very depleted, and just going and the continuous just sort of like sending out resumes, sort of like really like being like, oh my gosh, you're the only company that I want to work for, and not that I haven't also sent out this letter to 49 other places. And so during that time, that's when this also when the election happened, and 45 was elected, Trump, and that was just like for like many millennial caused like a whole sort of like, oh my god, like what's happening. And as somebody who was like really enthusiastic about Sanders and was really enthusiastic about canvassing, about access to healthcare, about just like income inequality, that's what sort of in a moment of just like not being employed and then sort of like seeing this sort of like absolute like maelstrom of politics sort of like descend upon the United States. That's when I got active in Democratic Socialists of America, as well as the People's Lobby, which is another community organizing group here in Chicago, both of which I very much indebted to in terms of like getting to know people, getting to understand what is like self-interest within community organizing, and was really able to sort of get a footing into a footing of like what is like, what does Chicago need from its community organizers? Because at the end of the day, like the idea of community organizing is like there's a problem. Like there's a problem with either violence, there's a problem with your housing, there's a problem with schools. And so that's what really put me into like community organizing was just like, frankly, that's just like a paucity of any other opportunity. And when you feel like you can't get a job easily, is like, I do believe that like having work can be a very sort of like, allows you to like explore certain parts of yourself, like it pushes your mind in ways. And I wasn't able to get that through the traditional route that the boot camp was allegedly going to give me. And so that's what community organizing gave me.
And do you think that's like a larger portion of your like identity nowadays? Because I do notice, like, you know, like in your bio, you're a community organizer who happens to code. So yes. You think that's like the more important part of yourself?
So, I mean, all praise to people that are like super enthusiastic about tech. But the question that always, like when you're at a bar and somebody says like, so what do you do? Like my always response is like, I work as a web developer, but hopefully like that's the least interesting thing about me. And so community organizing, so like the way that I see tech is really, I think like the idea of like a vocation is just like, I very much am working towards the idea that like, it is just like, it allows me to live where I live. And I am very fortunate in the fact that it does pay very adequately. And so to your question of just like, how do I definitely think that like organizing is where I find a lot of potential. That's what gives me sort of exposure to like much, in my mind, like much more challenging ideas. So just like, is this like a city that like I really want to be in? And like, why is it? Like, is it because of like legislation that's like getting passed or not getting passed? Is it for the fact that I've got a very terrible alderman who is like cutting back on affordable housing and is causing our schools to receive less funding? Is it talking about how like there's like constant amount of like police cars, but like does that actually respond to like what does violence look like? And I don't think those questions are going to be offered in tech. But even the ability to sort of organize is still part of like my privilege. And to do, I think it was like Alice Walker who said that like my activism is the rent that I pay for having an opportunity to live on this earth. And so that's like a line that I sort of, not that like, whatever, people can problematize that line and be like, no, you shouldn't have to do stuff just because you're alive. But I do really believe that like, having that, being in discussion with these larger ideas of like accessibility, like oppression, are the things that really make me feel enthusiastic and vibrant. And tech is like, great. Like every 2 weeks, like my bank account gets money. Like, whoa, that's like wild, wild. but I'm also curious about like your, cause I know April that you have a computer science degree. Mm-hmm. But I am curious like how you sort of like have enjoyed or like what has been like your sort of like on-ramp into this world of tech.
Yeah. So yeah, I have a computer science degree, which I got by the skin of my teeth. I was not a good student in college. My mom will tell you that I gave her heartburn all the time. I remember she tells me all the time that she thinks I graduated and like didn't know how to code. But like, honestly, I got extremely lucky. I went to the Grace Hopper conference coming into my senior year of college. And while I was at Grace Hopper, I interviewed with Allstate and they decided to offer me a job. I didn't know what I was gonna do. So they decided to offer me a job. I had the choice between Charlotte and Chicago, and I didn't want to live in the South. So I decided to come to Chicago. and came to Allstate. And honestly, my mom was right. I was not a great coder at all. But working at Arity, which is like was like a tech startup through Allstate, I really got exposed to like a lot of technology, a lot of responsibility. And it was like, either you're gonna sink or swim. And like you said, I was getting paid a lot more than, you know, a lot of people coming right out of college. So I was like, I'm gonna keep this money no matter what. So I, you know, I worked hard. I made a lot of connections, met some people, made my way over to Blue Cross. And obviously now I'm leaving Blue Cross to go to a new job. But
where is the new job?
Oh, Kin & Carta, which is
Yes. You're in Chicago. You know,
yeah, still in Chicago. So that's kind of been my journey into it. I've been out of college for just 4 years now. So I do find myself very lucky and very privileged to like actually have gotten to where I am within the 4 years. So I am hyper aware of that all the time.
Yes, and highly favored. Yeah.
And what about you, Emily?
Yeah, I think how I got into tech was similar to April's as well. And I do feel like tech is my whole world in a sense. It really has like consumed me in a bit, but for me it's also in a good way. Like April and I both run this nonprofit, and it's a cybersecurity nonprofit that is all about making cybersecurity more accessible, more inclusive. And so in a way, like our organizing is also in tech. So it really is like a big part of my world. And I think April, a big part of your world, but I agree. It's very important that, you know, you also look outside of the tech realm too.
The one question, if I may ask, the idea of like tech is sort of sold as, A, because I think tech has this idea of just like, oh, it's like ones and zeros. It's sort of like this like very like, it doesn't matter who's like touching the keyboard as long as the code is good. Or the idea of like boot camps that say that like anybody can learn to code. but so tech has sort of like really offered this idea of just like this hyper transparent, hyper accessible, just like as long as like you're like good with your brain. And I think that that's worth a little bit more of like a interrogation of just like these workplaces, especially looking at like what these companies, like just even as like how they're formed. And so I'm wondering like, what does exhaustion look like for you in the workplace? Or maybe there's like a lack of exhaustion. If so, like, please tell me how you're doing it. But like, I do think, I'm wondering like how you sort of see like both forms of exhaustion and also restoration in these like workplaces.
Yeah, I think, you know, like always like a primary form of exhaustion is also like, you know, it's like number one, being Black in the workspace, and then like double whammy being a Black woman in the workspace. Like, you know, whether I worked at Allstate or whether I worked at Blue Cross, it was like guaranteed that I was like the only Black woman developer like on that entire engineering team. Even if there are other Black people, even if there are other women, like, you know, there was almost guaranteed like nobody else, or if there was, like they weren't there for long. So number one, it's always exhausting being like in that intersection, because you don't really have anybody there that like fully understands what you're talking about. And then also like what you touched on, Andrew, in tech, and although we know tech is not just coding, there's other facets of it. A large part of it is the code. And like you had said, like the way they talked about code is that, well, as long as you can use your brain, anyone can code, but then you're really only being valued for your brain. And a lot of that exhaustion comes from the fact that, you know, you have to be on all the time. Something goes down, you have to wake up in the middle of the night. You constantly have to be on 24/7. Like, I stare at the computer so much that I've like started developing migraines, and I know that I've started like grinding my teeth at night because I'm always, so not necessarily because of my job, but you know, when you're focused on something all day long, you know, you end up developing a lot of like stress and tension. And so on that aspect for me, that's how it gets really, it gets very exhausting when you're only being valued for like what your brain can bring. And I feel like in a lot of, you know, companies and a lot of industries, developers aren't valued as much, like their mental health isn't valued as, you know, as much. We're just expected to produce all the time. And when we're not producing, they want to ask us, why are you not producing? Like, man, I'm just tired.
I mean, there is, I feel like, this like Hollywood myth of like, what is a developer? Like the Social Network movie, the Facebook movie. And they're just like the hackathon. Like the always is sort of like the hackathon where it's just like, you just like are coding for like 16 hours straight. And there's like 10 Diet Pepsis like right next to like your computer. And like you and just like a whole bunch of people that do have no respect for hygiene. And it's a sort of like weird, like, and even, I feel like there's this idea, like going to your point, April, of like characterizing it as like the sign of like an authentic programmer is one that's like so selfless that they just like would, like that's like a sign of like almost being good at programming, is that like you show up like very sort of like almost like degraded looking though. And I bring that up is because that's also then gets into like a gendered thing where like if a male sort of like shows up sort of like looking disheveled, they're just like, oh, he's such a good programmer, like literally he can't be bothered to look at anything beyond the code. And then just like if a woman were to look like, or like just like a non, like non-male to show up looking like very disheveled, they'd be like, oh wow, like you don't really take this seriously, do you? Like you should be like adequately presented if you want to do this. And I think that's like a little, so yeah, I definitely agree with that point of like the idea of like valuation on just the brain is like, it's a weird toxic and it doesn't like incorporate the other aspects that like make like work draining.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think it is kind of glorified, that like idea of the programmer just not caring about anything else and just digging in. I also thought your point about like the workplace and the tech workplace environment, how do you think that's changed with everything being remote? Because you talked about, you know, it's not necessarily a comfortable place for a lot of people, but do you think that it being all remote has made that better or worse, or what are your thoughts?
I mean, the best part about remote is just showing that like people can do work from the home. So differently abled people are just like people who like use wheelchairs, or if like, I think that's like probably been the biggest sort of like managers, like do you actually need to make people go into the office? Like if like productivity can be done sufficiently at home. I do think though that part of what sort of like how like a lot of managers make their like sort of like prove their worth is like sort of like managing people. And to a degree, like if you can be productive and like it might show that like some of these managers like aren't actually that useful, like I think that there's going to be a little bit of like, I do think that there's probably some conversations happening just like, why do we have like such overhead with like corporate overhead when there should be a focus. So I do think with like the transition to work from home has probably been like a really good thing. I do, while at the same time, I guess like it could be a really great thing. The one thing is like, this is still being understood under like a pandemic. And so what like sort of like non-pandemic life looks like and also work from home. And like, there are probably some sort of intangibles that occur by just being able to be in conversation with each other. And then if the pendulum swings so far as like, we get rid of all sense of community and then you isolate people, like, yes, you might not have like racial microaggressions because like we're all just like these like black boxes just producing. But there is like a detriment if you only think of yourself as just writing, just or just producing code or just doing this particular thing. I think there's and I think this is what we'll talk about later, hopefully, is the idea of just like, what does like solidarity in the workplace look like? Because that is going to be near impossible, I believe. My belief is if like you just like are logging in for these specific moments and then disengaging very quickly. So I'm hesitant to say like it's all going to be good.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense what you're saying, especially like you said, we'll talk about solidarity in the workplace later, but you know, being able to be present all the time in tech is definitely something I think that because of burnout, a lot of people, you know, a lot of us don't necessarily show up all the time because it's like, I'm tired. I want to go home. I don't have the mental strength or capacity to actually deal with something anymore. Of course, that's also a privilege in and of itself because some of us can't just decide to disengage. We're always engaged. But yeah, I think like the whole burnout aspect, the expectation to go above and beyond all the time really causes not like a destruction, but like it definitely causes a lack in culture. It causes culture to go down when people feel like they're not being valued on the person level.
So yeah, I mean, when you say like you're in tech, like what does that, and you can sort of like, it doesn't have to just be one, or just like, what is a sort of like collection of responses? What do they look like?
Yeah, it's interesting. At first, you know, usually when I say I'm in tech, people just generally are like, oh, that's cool. But I feel like a lot of people don't still, despite the fact that we're such a technical world and we're all on the internet, I feel like a lot of people still don't know like what tech is and stuff like that. Like my family, they're obviously really supportive. It's really funny. I have like this one cousin who always jokes that like I work at Google or something like that, or that I own Google. But I feel like a lot of people, when I say like either I'm like a software developer or a software engineer, they're just kind of like, oh. Yeah, I never know whether that oh is like, oh, I don't know what that is, or oh, I wouldn't have pegged you to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, my optimistic self is always like, they're just saying, oh, they didn't realize it, but I feel like they don't realize what it is. But I feel like a lot of it is probably like, oh, that's not what I expected. Mm-hmm. Like my mom, I remember used to tell me this story about, so like, you know, my mom's name is Alice. So, you know, it's very, you know, very European, you know, very, you know, just very white sounding. And our last name Uzzle is also like very not, very like, no, I'm not going to say it's white sounding, but it's very, you know, people wouldn't peg it for like a black family, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. And so she always tells me about, there are a couple of interviews that she's gone into and people go do that whole, oh, you're not Alice, right? Like, mm-hmm. I'm right here. But
what?
Oh, you're not who I'm looking for. Like, that's so wrong. And that's what I feel like sometimes when I tell some people I'm in tech. You know, I tell them that and they're like, are you really?
Yeah, are you lying to me? Okay.
But yeah, that's been my experience for how people react when I say I'm in tech.
So how do people react? I would say people are definitely surprised when I say I'm in tech. I don't know, I guess that's just the best way to say it. They're just like surprised and sometimes interested, sometimes not interested in hearing what I actually do, but yeah, I don't know if that helps. I don't know, I've always had this feeling of not quite belonging, I guess, especially in, I used to be more in math, and I do feel like there was a more of a feeling in math actually of not fitting in than in tech. So I guess if anything, that's one of the reasons I really just started loving tech, because I did find it better. I was not doing well in the math environment. So whether it's definitely not perfect, but it was just better for me. So.
But it shows again, just like that, like, I wish that there was like a little bit more of like this idea that like what does working in tech look like? Because I think that even if there is sort of like knowledge within sort of like tech workers, as like an industry, it's going to sort of, this might be sort of like a little bit of just like a too broad of a statement, but like somebody's going to like dictate like what the tech industry looks like. And overwhelmingly, it's probably going to just be like leaders of like the highest level of management for like the company. And it's either going to be them as sort of like very much top level people, or it's going to sort of be like a idea of just like general workers themselves. And I think it's, I'm curious to just think of like how tech can be a little bit like, just the public can be more aware of just like what goes on in the tech industry. Like, what does like working in tech look like? Because again, just always going against this idea of just like, oh, like it's either like, oh, I can't know anything about it. Like this sort of like, oh, like I have no idea what you could ever do. Like that just seems so impossible what you do. Like lines of code look like gibberish to me. It's just like, comes off as I feel like almost like a little too adamantly like dismissive, or just sort of like uninterested, or just sort of like worthy, like seeing like, oh, like what does it mean to you? It's more of just like, I have an idea of what it is. And I think that goes into, I think that flows into sort of like, what does like both allyship look like, or solidarity look like? I like the word solidarity. Allyship, I think, has like sort of been like corporatized, and like Target likes it and Sears likes it. I'm just like, oh, I don't know. Like, am I an ally? I don't know. But I'd rather be in solidarity. And so, yeah, so then goes in like, what does solidarity look like? Especially knowing that like, we have these sort of like very peculiar like tech monoliths that people sort of like quasi understand tech as, but like are really just like any other corporate institution. Like we've sort of like talked about, like we do have like these like very peculiar experiences, understanding of just like what does class and class, race, gender look like in both like accessibility and also just like maintaining yourself within tech. And so now it goes into how do we sort of like really proactively form knowledge around it that sort of like makes it a better space. And so that's where the sort of like allyship comes in, or solidarity. Just like bleep out whenever I say allyship, just like put in like the cuss word like bleep. And then yeah, make them think that like I said something wretched when in fact I just said the A word.
And I think that going back to what you were saying about, you know, the whole, you know, who forms these companies, who decides who's at the top. And, you know, kind of like what we talked about earlier, a lot of like the top companies, you know, specifically in the US, obviously, because we're in the US, were formed by, you know, cis white men. I feel like a lot of people who are empowered want other people who look like them also in power. You know, I'm a woman, so I want to see more women in tech. I'm Black, so I want to see more Black people in tech. And so, you know, if you're a white CEO, you want to see more people like you. You want to see your kids, you want to see your grandkids, you know, in the same position that you are. And thus you're upholding practices that keep other people down, you know, whether it's not hiring someone or not interviewing someone because their name is weird to you and you can't pronounce it. Or you meet someone and you can't pronounce their name and they tell you and you tell them, oh, that's still too hard, so I'm just gonna call you Joe or something like that. I feel like a lot of tech institutions really do uphold the whole, you know, we want everybody at the top kind of the same, or we're only going to hire people who we get a reference for, and because everyone at the top is basically white, you're only going to get references for white people, and thus tech is going to stay the way it is. And that's why we have all these problems with solidarity.
Yeah, I just wanted to add on to that, that I really do think you need representation at every level and every department, every type of role. And I think also it's really important with interviewers that they are very like equipped with that DEI information, that they're well represented of people of all backgrounds. Because I think that also affects the candidate when they're going into their interview and everyone who interviews them doesn't have the same background, it already puts you off as another hurdle, kind of. Whereas if it's someone like you, you feel a little bit more comfortable. So I think that's also something that's not considered, but probably should be. But yeah, I think that leadership, especially, there is this image to uphold that I think goes with gender, race, you know, I think sexuality as well is something that doesn't get talked about, but I think is also really important, because there is this like idea, there is this image of who is at the top, and I don't think it's always inclusive. People feeling like they can actually talk about their families or their home life. It's just like another thing that sets people, makes them feel like less comfortable in the workplace.
Totally agree. So when it gets into the end, the sort of like thing that I'm just like belaboring over and over, the idea of the myth, is that the idea that like, do you want to, these companies that are like tech companies, the idea is like, some ideas like you just want to create like the best code possible. And so if you want to create like the best code possible, if it is truly like a purely cognitive, a purely like abstract thing of just like the best, and you could apply this to like as a car manufacturer, do you want to like make the best cars possible? As like a like food manufacturer, that like the best food is like, if you're really dedicated to that, you have to do like a lot to make sure that like you're like the best access to candidates. So you're supporting your candidates, you're supporting employees like very consistently. And I think there's always a sort of like the interplay of just like, okay, like we want to sort of like be this sort of like state organization that allows people in power to like maintain power. That would be like a really destructive thing to actually say, like if we are going to actually have to start like re-examining just like what does like racial bias look like and like the promotion process, like if they actually wanted to do that. And I don't think that that is, I think that's like a really important strain to sort of like amplify the, of like, cause I think of the solidarity is both acknowledgement of like, actually there is something that like, that should be done. And it's now it goes from like the acknowledgement to then this sort of like collection, like collectively sort of like discussing it. And this is a quote that is from Patricia Collins, who is like a black feminist scholar, amazing. And one of the lines that she gave that I really like is, suppressing the knowledge produced by any oppressed group makes it easier for dominant groups to rule, because the seeming absence of dissent suggests that subordinate groups willingly collaborate in their own victimization. Mostly it's just like, if like, yeah. So the line of like, okay, like we're not, like if black people aren't talking about like racism that much, then like clearly it's like, it's not that important to them. Like they would, like we've already hired enough that like they could say it to our faces. And that's like, I think the final sort of like, or not final, but like one of the like, then the sort of like tail end of it gets into, so like what does like actively discussing, having conversations around like race, because that's something that's like dissuaded from, like that goes against the idea of like we're just brains in front of a computer. It goes against the idea that like we have like different background experiences when we walk into the doors of our building. Like corporations, I think, are meant to sort of like sanitize you as you walk into the space, and do it on the premise of like, oh, like we are free from judgment here, and like we accept anybody of like whatever their background identity is, but also don't talk about your identity, because like the easiest way to say that you're all equal is just like to not acknowledge like any differences and just let the presumed structures take hold. So that's a question that I want to offer, is like, what does that look like as you go into like a new workplace, looking at you, or if you already at like your existing workplace?
For me, one of the things, I've definitely started looking more into like their whole interview process as a whole. So like companies that are transparent about what an interview with them looks like exactly. Like, you know, because a lot of people, you know, if you have anxiety, ADHD, if they just tell you, oh, you're going to have an interview, but you don't know what's going to go on, you can spend days mulling over something that hasn't even happened. And then you end up psyching yourself out because you don't know what's happening. And also for me, and I know tons of companies still don't do this, but I will fight for companies to put their salary ranges on job postings. I think that's just, you know, that just speaks volumes to me about, you know, number one, you value an interviewee's time, and you also are transparent about what you're paying people. Because I hate when I go into interviews and they're like, so what's your salary range? Because it's kind of like a toss-up. Either they'll hear what you say but still like give you the higher amount that was in their budget, or they'll hear what you say and more often than not they'll just go with that lower end what you said. So for me, I think I like companies that, you know, definitely put their employees first. And to me, having a transparent interview process definitely to me sounds like putting employees first. Yeah, transparent interview process and really just valuing your employees' personal lives, meaning knowing they have a job, not a job, they just have a life outside of this job. You know, I don't live to work, I work to live. So that's for me what's most important.
Yeah, I think for me it would be not having to try to conform to this one image, because I do think a lot of times in the workplace, you're supposed to act what's called professional. And really, what does it mean to be professional? I feel like a lot of it ends up being hiding parts of yourself, even if it is something like gender and race. You know, you can't hide that, but in a way you can, because, you know, like April, what you were saying about not being able to talk about certain issues in a way that is hiding who you are. And I think that's a real problem. And I don't know how to change it. I feel like it's a whole culture shift that needs to happen. But I always feel like it's all about upholding a certain image in professionalism. And I wish that wasn't the way it is.
I mean, I totally agree. The idea of just like, just to your point, just like professional, but like professional really is just like just self erasure according to like what like the dominant guideline is. I think what I'm sort of picking up on, I think the idea of just that solidarity is A, because where I would push back is just like access to leadership. At the end of the day, like leadership, I don't like the term leadership. I think management is the term that I would give them. I think leadership is a very great new lingo that they've like developed. What I distill it down to is just like management will not, and this is like a very standard like labor paradigm, is like management will only respect you as much as like the workers themselves like respect themselves. Like it's easy to sort of like, they don't like, if you want to like go up against the boss, if like the boss knows that all of you are in sort of like connection with each other, that you are like familiar with each other and with each other's lives, I think that's when, because that's when you can sort of, I mean, this gets into sort of like the like old school styles of just like, what does like a walkout, like that's the most traditional thing, like a strike or like a walkout. There's other ways that like workers can sort of like be in solidarity with each other. But it is, if management sees that you're already having that discussion with each other. Like, for example, like salary, like if management will put salary on their sort of like listing, if they see that, like, oh wow, like everyone who works for us has already discussed salary with each other, like, and like it's making us look really bad. Like, I don't think management is going to proactively put salary, but I think that they are going to be like, wait a minute, everyone's here has discussed salary, and like they're saying like it's completely uneven and we need to like be accountable to like this, because at the end of the day, like, we are larger than management. Like, this general workers, like, have, like, I think you dropped that line of just like, it was when you're in some meeting and like somebody kept on talking about claims and just like, watch me go over and like delete the claims app out of like PCF right now if you like keep on like harassing or whatever, saying like shit about like what the portfolio is doing. And I think like there is the way to sort of like feel powerful is also feeling connection with each other. And maybe just to like leave on just such a sort of like sappy note, but just like, it is like solidarity comes from just sort of like enthusiasm for each other's lives that like extend outside, and sort of getting to see each other as more multifaceted than what your employer wants you to sort of think of each other as. And that can be, especially when, to Emily's point, can be really difficult when like the idea of showing up to work means sort of like being as sort of like parceled out or sort of like diminished or erased. So that is a really tough tension to sort of like go through. Like, I want to be presentable and appropriate, but also like, you are so much more beautiful than just like your like salary. Like, and you are so much more exceptional than the lines of code that you write. So that's where I just sort of want to leave on. It's like, you are so much more than that. And part of solidarity is getting to sort of like explore that and be enthusiastic about that with other coworkers, despite what others wish that you didn't.
And I guess to, you know, maybe start to close this out, kind of like how you asked us, like, what would be our wish list if we went into a new company when it came to solidarity? Like, what is your wish list, Andrew? Like, what do you want to see in workplaces?
My number one would be a 30-hour maximum work week. Like, I do not think that I think what work from home has sort of exposed is like, there is not actually that much work to do. Like, the workplace, by having a physical workplace, it's sort of said like, okay, you're gonna get here at 9 and you're gonna leave at 5, and we're just gonna try and extract the most work from you as possible. And then maybe like afterwards, like in your off hours. What I hope is like realizing is just like, I've just seen this from other friends, it's just like, you don't actually have like often like 30, 40 hours of work to do. And if anything, for companies to just sort of like really hone that as like a practice, because it does take knowledge of just like, what do workflows look like and how you make it, and I think that could mean then hiring more people, or maybe it just means that like hire the same amount of people and just be like vulnerable enough to realize like, we don't actually have 40 hours of work to do. And being okay with that, because like the whole idea of just like, we're trying to just get work out of you is like, that's what then justifies like, well, like, it looks like your gender is coming at the expense of us being as productive as possible. Like, oh, it looks like sort of like your background, your identity is sort of like making other people feel uncomfortable. So like axe that. Like, it's a rude thing of just like, you're here to do work for as many hours as like is feasible or is socially appropriate for your job. And I would like to hope that like the next place I'm at is like, they will be like very intentional, just like, yeah, we're okay with the fact that like you're gonna be like, you can clean your apartment or like go work out for 2 hours during the day. Like, and we're not trying to like push you as hard as possible, because like, again, to Emily's point, is like, these companies are making plenty of money. Like, if people actually knew how much money they contributed to like the company's bottom line, like, so many people I think would be incensed to be like, no, wait a minute, why am I getting this salary if like I'm giving you that much?
Yeah, I also just think that across the board, if there was that limit of how much time you could actually work, it would make it easier for people to get into other fields and learn new skills, because that's such a roadblock, especially getting into tech. Like, there's so much to learn, and if you can't take time off from a job, then that making that transition is just so hard. So I think it would help with that. I think, you know, it also help with being more, doing more activism, things like that. Like, people, I don't think people would just be lazy. I think they would actually like use that time in a productive way.
It should not be underestimated what happens by the fact that, like, when they co-locate workers in the same place, they limit information that you're at, like, that you can access. They limit the people that you can be around. Like, it is 8 hours, like, out of your community. They also, like, put, like, commute time on you, which is, like, can just be, like, taxing in and of itself. Like, there is, like, a form of control of taking people out of their communities, putting them in a sterile building, and then sort of, like, draining them of both, like, emotional and intellectual labor, and then dropping them back into, like, where they were, and being, and then, like, that creates a desert for the ability to sort of like grow new ideas in your community, or even to be tapped into your community. And I think that's, yeah, I really think that that's, when it comes to like that solidarity, I think that maybe, Emily, to your point, like when you asked earlier, like, what does work from home mean? I think this could be probably one of the biggest things, is like communication is open and access to community is so much more accessible, that really a building is really, I think, meant to, because we could have been doing work from home years ago. Like,
But so basically, to summarize, we want to work fewer hours and make more money.
And be in our communities.
See? Yeah. To summarize this whole entire
more money, less work.
Exactly. More involvement in your community.
More money, less work. Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, so.
Go ahead, Emily.
Go ahead.
Okay, I was just going to say, Andrew, did you want to give any closing remarks?
That's what I was going to say.
Thank you. First, thank y'all for inviting me onto this podcast. I incredibly enjoyed speaking with y'all and sort of getting to go on like what at times may have been like rambling rants on just sort of like my ideas. But hopefully they came across like cohesively enough. But yeah, just like the idea of just like technology, like there are so many myths. The 40-hour work week as a myth, the idea that like, I think that's what we sort of like interwove a lot of, just like what are things that we can sort of like inquire into and sort of like realize that there's like a much more multifaceted reality behind. And I feel like we got to explore that today. So super thankful for that. And yeah, I look forward to listening to this in a very sort of narcissistic way, but like, yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on, Andrew. And if people are interested in talking to you or learning more, how can they find you?
Yes, so the easiest way to access is Real Andrew Carr, my Instagram handle at Real Andrew Carr. And yeah, I think send me a DM there, specifically if you're interested in organizing on the north side of Chicago, or if you just wanna get a like a plug into somewhere in Chicago. I have friends throughout, community organizers throughout. I'm specifically interested in socialist organizing on the left, specifically with my main organization is Afro Socialists and Socialists of Color. We are a BIPOC only, that stands for Black Indigenous POC only organization that's fighting for power in Chicago through a socialist lens. That often means either electoral or through direct action, public policy, a variety of tactics, but mostly in terms of like being in solidarity with each other and creating community with each other. So, if that's something that you're interested in, hit me up on Instagram, and I look forward to continuing the conversation there.
Great. Yeah, so that's Instagram at Real Andrew Carr with two R's.
Yes.
Definitely look him up. And for anyone who wants to learn more about Tech and Savvy, you can go to our website, tech-savvy.com. It has links to our Instagram, YouTube, and of course, Spotify, all of the podcast places too. So yeah, thank you all for listening.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.